Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the truth and possibly the myths of the people and events that created the Sunshine City. Thanks for tuning in today. My name is Rui Frias, and I have the best job in town. I'm the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History. The Museum of History has been sharing the stories of the Sunshine City for over 102 years, and now we're happy to share those stories with you here on Radio St. Pete. So way back when the village of St. Petersburg was originally platted in the late 1800s, there was one block of green space for a city park. In 1908, it was named Williams Park. It became the center of city leisure activities, but by 1920, maybe too many leisure activities. Residents start complaining that games for leisure were overrunning the natural green space. So around 1923-ish, city leaders decided to move those activities a couple blocks west. And to share the story of what comes next is our guest today, Christine Page. Christine is the executive director of the St. Petersburg Shuffleboard Club located on Mirror Lake. Welcome, Christine. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'd like to say that I think I might have the best job in St. Pete, so it's a competition.
All right. So first things first, right? We got to set this the record straight here. Is shuffleboard a game or a sport?
That's actually a question that comes up a lot between shuffleboard people. It's a sport. It definitely is a sport. And, you know, a game, it is different than a sport. And the game is for recreation and it's for fun. And you can definitely spend your whole life playing shuffleboard as a game and just for fun. But to be good at shuffleboard, to play in tournaments, you need skills. You need to know the strategy. It's definitely a game of skill. So therefore, it's a sport.
And there is a world championship, right? So I guess
there's
sport
state,
is where it belongs.
Right? National and world championships. Yeah.
There you go. All right. So tell us how this sport began. So how did shuffleboard start?
It started in a different form about 500 years ago in England. It was, if you've ever been to a bar and you've seen the tabletop shuffleboard game.
I love those.
Yeah, that's how it started. It was called shovegroat or shoveboard, and you would, or shove penny. It's pretty much explains what the game was. You'd shove a penny down a big wooden plank, and it was played in taverns. Henry VIII was a big fan. The first recorded incident, recorded word shovegroat was in his royal expenses. He lost 9 pounds to shuffleboard, which must have been a lot back then. He eventually banned it because he thought it was too distracting for soldiers. So it actually came to America in the 1600s. It was mentioned in the Crucible. It's still a tavern game, but eventually the British Navy painted it on the deck of their ships. When they got bored, they started playing it as a deck game, and that jumped to cruise ships in the 1800s, and then eventually in 1913, a man in Daytona who owned a hotel played shuffleboard on a cruise, and he loved it, and he came home and he painted it outside his hotel on a sidewalk, and that is how the modern game Florida shuffleboard was invented.
So this is another Florida first, then, right?
Absolutely.
What we know as shuffleboard was invented here in the state of Florida.
Right. Yeah.
Dang, we're the first at everything.
Exactly.
Here.
Yeah.
So when did shuffleboard arrive here in St. Petersburg?
In 1922-23, a man named Phineas Ives. It's a great name. He was wintering down here. He saw it in Daytona at the Lyndhurst Hotel, and he decided St. Pete needed one, so he came here. And you were absolutely correct. He approached the city first, and he wanted to build a court in Williams Park. But that was right as that injunction was filed by the Williams family to not put any more activities there. So they needed a place, and the north part of Mirror Lake had the room. So the city built two courts where we are now.
Now, I know this is for a different history lesson, but the north part of Mirror Lake was basically swampland and was eventually filled. So is that the area where the shuffleboard club is? So it's the north side of Mirror Lake Drive, right?
Actually, I did not know that it was filled. But yeah, the north part of Mirror Lake, there was a baseball field there. There were tennis courts there before we got there. The lawn bowling club was there since 1916. So they were the first, the remaining clubs, they were the first one there.
So every time, I fly off the interstate and I come down the exit there, you can't help but see the sign that says, the largest shuffleboard club in the world. So do we still have that claim?
Absolutely. Now, at its height, before they put that interstate in, it was 110 courts, but we still have 86, I believe. Still by far the largest.
And obviously, you know, we'll talk about some of the events that happened there, but you can be a member. I mean, I first became a member, I think, in the 1980s, back in the day, and then renewed my membership recently. But do you have to be a member to play there?
No, you don't. Membership is only $50 for an individual, $90 for a family for a year. So it's very affordable if you want to play free all year round. But if you want to just come and try it out, it's $10 on when we're open, which is Tuesday, Thursdays, 6 to 9, Fridays, 7 to 10 p.m., and then Sundays from 9 a.m. to noon. And that's we'll teach you how to play, set you up with the equipment,
So how many members do you guys have now?
We have 2,600.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really good. So in its heyday, do you know how that compares, like back in the 30s, 40s?
I read that in the 50s, there were up to 7,000 members.
Okay.
And then shuffleboard started falling out of favor in the 70s, 80s. It started, the popularity started dwindling. And by 2005, we were down to 35 members. That's what I've heard. So we have, we've really worked hard to bring that back up to where we are now.
Well, congratulations.
So thanks.
And you see it everywhere. I mean, when you drive around town, there, you know, you still see shuffleboard courts, like it, you know, whether at mobile home parks or, mm-hmm. I mean, I know a couple of people actually have them. I almost put one in my backyard, mm-hmm. actually. So, I mean, you still see that a lot around town.
Mm-hmm.
The courts where you are now, the club right now, it's a city facility, correct?
Correct.
So how does the organization run?
It's a little confusing for people because it is city property.
Right.
The city built the first two courts. I believe they built the first four courts in the 20s. And then they did build the original clubhouse in 27. Apparently the club tried to pay for it, but the city was like, no, it's city property. That's weird. We're going to pay for it. But then subsequently, the club built all the buildings from then on. I think the last building was 42, in 1942, and then built all the courts. However, it is still city property. And when shuffleboard declined in popularity and it was down to, you know, 200, 100, then 35 members, the club couldn't maintain the buildings anymore.
Okay.
So use was transferred over to the city for them to take care of the buildings, and then the club took care of the courts. And it wasn't until we started the Friday nights in 2005 and became popular again that we took back use and programming of the buildings.
And the downturn of the popularity, I mean, basically, you know, you're saying 70s, 80s, 90s, that pretty much just kind of mirrored what was happening downtown. And when you see, you know, the resurgence, obviously, in downtown, a lot of those activities just came along with them, mm-hmm. right? So I'm glad to see that the club has rebounded like that. So let me ask you this, because I know that you travel a lot.
I do.
I'll ask you about that in a second to see shuffleboard. I heard a story. So is this true that there's an organization in New York that kind of copied what you guys are doing?
Yeah. I would say it's an homage.
There you go. Okay.
They're really good friends of ours. They came down maybe 12 years ago and saw our Friday nights and went back and built a bar really based on our Friday nights. And they're very, very popular. They were so popular, they opened another one in Chicago. So there's two of them now, the Royal Palms. And they have really done such a great job of getting new, younger players in these parts of the countries, not just Florida. You know, now really serious young players in New York and Chicago.
So where do they play in New York? Is it?
It's like a 19th century Coca-Cola bottling plant.
Oh.
Yeah.
Indoor, then?
Indoors. They've got 10 courts in Gowanus, Brooklyn.
Okay.
So it's a big space.
I mean, that's the exact opposite of us, obviously, because, I mean, you know, back in the day, obviously, there was no air conditioning. So when the club started, I mean, people were looking for outdoor activities to do.
Right, and there's their drinks are named after shuffleboard players around the country, but there's, I don't even know, Mary Eldridge, who ran our club for a long time, and she's a great player. There's a Mary Eldridge drink. There's Jim and Beth Allen drink, and they owned Allen Shuffleboard in Seminole, where everybody buys their supplies. There's a Christine Page drink. There's a Mirror Lake
of course
drink.
There is. You know. So, when people think about shuffleboard, and you know, when I spent that time teaching Florida history at St. Pete High, I would take my kids there occasionally.
I remember that. That was fun.
When I would tell them we're going to play shuffleboard, they'd look at me like I was crazy, right? I mean, in even some of the older kids, older meaning in the 20s, you talk about shuffleboard, and of course they think it's an old person's game or automatically reminds them of Cocoon, you know, or something like that, right? So can you explain like the rise in popularity in the last few years? I mean, it's not your grandfather's shuffleboard courts anymore, right?
That's funny because you used to see this, not as often anymore, but you used to, on a Friday night, see people and you could tell which person was dragging the other person in to come experience this, because their faces were like, you can't see my face, but it was like, oh, I got to do this. And they would turn the corner and they would see 200 people playing shuffleboard and they'd hear the music and the beautiful twinkly lights and everything, and their jaws would just drop. And you don't see it anymore a lot anymore because so many people already know the shuffleboard club, but it was always one of my favorite things to just see someone just, their whole expression changed when they saw what was happening.
So tell us about the Friday nights. I mean, is that the event that pretty much turned it around?
Yes, definitely. There were a group of people, Chad Mize and Philip Clark and Chris Kelly and Christy Knowles approached Mary Eldridge. The four of them, they were artists like Chad and historic preservation fans like Chris Kelly. And they approached Mary Eldridge and said, what if we just open the club up to the public on a Friday night? Because more people really need to see this place.
Correct.
And they had to get permission from the city. It actually went all the way up to Rick Baker to approve it. And they got the okay. And that was April of 2005. I think the first week, maybe 25 people showed up. More and more people showed up every week. And then by, a year later, the courts were full every Friday night.
And what happens there on Friday night? So what do they bring?
You can bring food. You can bring drinks in moderation. And you don't need equipment. You just come, and a volunteer or a staff person will show you how to play. We've got music going on. Occasionally, we have special events. Occasionally, we'll have some live music or something. But back in 2005, they tried everything to get people in. They would have art shows and live music and as a way to entice people in. And now the shuffleboard stands on its own. People come there with shuffleboard.
So I have to admit, about a year ago, we played in Wednesday Night League. And I remember the first night that I showed up to play. I mean, I've loved shuffleboard my whole life, but never took it seriously as a sport. I've always been a soccer player my whole life.
It was
right?
A game to you?
Yes, it was. It was a game. And I remember we were playing, and the team that we were playing against, I don't remember even what I did, but the gentleman starts yelling at me because whatever I did was wrong. And I'm looking at him going, oh my God, I have a beer in my hand and it's shuffleboard. You need to relax. But I mean, this is like, these people are serious.
Right, and that's an unfortunate thing for you for your first game.
No,
you should never get yelled at for playing shuffleboard. You should be, you should be gently like, oh, hey, let me show you the ropes. But some people do take it very seriously. I say time and time again, the leagues are for fun. They're not for yelling.
I'm all about winning, so I understand that. I get that, right?
My theory is that if we have 400 league players total for all three nights. If there's 400 of them, the 10% are super serious about it. 10% barely know where they are. They're just there to hang out with their friends. And then the rest of us are in the middle. We're there to make friends and have fun and play.
So talk a little bit about the sport itself, right? Most people think, okay, I'm going to go to play shuffleboard. I have these discs. Right, and you can elaborate on the real name of these things, right? And I just use this stick and I toss it across the green concrete to the next side. So talk a little bit about like the skills. I mean, what do you have to do to be a world class shuffleboard player?
Well, first of all, you are trying to propel a disc
or a biscuit,
um, 50 feet down to a precise location that you're aiming for with your cue or your tang. So that does take some skill. All courts are different, so you have to adjust. I mean, the they look perfectly even, but none of them really are. They all drift a certain way, so you have to do that. And then there's also a lot of, I like to say it's like playing chess with a stick, and you just have to push the chess piece 50 feet down, because there's a lot of strategy involved, too. There's a lot of putting up hides and trying to, you know, block your disc so someone can't get out, so someone can't knock yours out.
Correct.
A lot of, like, pushing people into the minus 10 area of the kitchen, or trying to clear the board. That's a phrase. So you just clear all the discs so you can score and no one can touch your discs or anything. There's a lot of skill involved. And I'm still, I've played for almost 20 years now, off and on, and I'm still learning the strategy. I still have to get really nervous when I'm playing in a tournament about if I'm making the right decision or not. And it's a lifelong education, really.
It's a completely different sport, but what you describe kind of is familiar to billiards, I guess, right? You have to understand opponent strategy, your strategy, angles, the whole thing.
Right, exactly. And I don't know. I'm not very good at billiards at all, but I know that in shuffleboard, sometimes the discs don't ricochet off each other like you want them to. It's kind of hard to predict what things are going to happen.
Got you. So tell us, how can people find out? Where do they go? Your website? How can they find out if they want to go try and play shuffleboard for the first time?
Well, our website is stpeteshuffle.com, and that's got all the information and our events coming up. And we're on social. We're on Facebook and Instagram. It's at St. Pete Shuffle. We have a big events list on the website. We do beginner boot camps once a month. Right now, because it's summer, we're doing Saturday mornings. But normally we do the first Thursday of the month at 7 o'clock in the evening. And if you don't know anything about shuffleboard, you get a half-hour lesson, and then you play for another 45 minutes, and you come out of that really understanding how to play. And then if you really, really like it, we have occasional strategy boot camps, too, where you learn how to set up St. Pete's and Tampa's. Those are the blocks that I mentioned earlier. Everywhere around the world calls them St. Pete's or Tampa's.
The St. Pete's win, right?
St. Pete's are easier to set up, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
I recommend starting with a St. Pete.
Good. As do I. Awesome. Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining us on Historically St. Pete and sharing this amazing history. I mean, you guys have been there for 100 years.
100 years, right? Yeah.
It's really hard to believe. So I'm inviting everyone to tune in weekly to Radio St. Pete for my weekly podcast, and stop by the Museum of History on your next visit to the St. Pete Pier to explore the rich and unique history of the Sunshine City. Visit historystpete.org for more details on our exhibits and new historic trolley, Segway, and boat tours. Thanks for listening, and again, join us next week on Historically St. Pete.